Hello, welcome to the California Work Comp Report podcast. This month, we have a special podcast for you where we have condensed RateFast's YouTube video playlist, PR4 Reports Explained, into a single podcast episode so that you can touch up on how to do PR4 reports properly while you're on the go. We start our series with an introduction to RateFast's CEO, Dr. John Alchemy.
Hi, John. Tell me a little bit about your background as a doctor in workers' compensation and how long you've been doing impairment reports.
Well, my background in impairment rating goes back over 20 years. I'm a family practice doctor. I've worked mostly in occupational medicine clinics. I've directed clinics. I've been center medical director at several large clinics, and I've been doing this a long time. Family practice, as I said, is my background, so it allows me to talk and think about impairment ratings across the entire AMA guides chapters, so not just orthopedics, but also cardiovascular, skin, etc. So I've been doing it for a while. I'm also a qualified medical examiner, and I've been doing that since 2001. So those are cases that are referred by the state or by attorneys to either do second opinions or re-ratings on cases. Back several years ago, around 2014, I founded RateFast, which was basically a response to doctors who wanted help getting these impairment ratings done in workers' compensation. And so we set up the program, and now we have RateFast for many years and many doctors using it as a means to help guide and format their impairment reports. So hopefully today we're going to tell our audience a little bit more about, you know, what is the PR4 report. And this is really designed for a doctor or a mid-level who just has not done a lot of PR4 reports, or maybe they've never done a PR4. Maybe they don't know what a PR4 report is.
So we've already got a lot of information in there about sort of, you know, who does a PR4 report and somewhat a little bit about what a PR4 report is. But, you know, as we've sort of mentioned in other things in the past, there's no set in stone formal procedural training for how one is done. So that is sort of the reason why we have so much content that has to do with PR4 report and why RateFast exists, is just because of the complexity of the whole thing itself, as well as the lack of formal education in terms of what to expect when writing one, what the adjuster expects to see and everything. So like I said, we got a little bit into it already, but can you elaborate on what a PR4 report is?
Sure, absolutely. So the PR4 report is performed, and this is kind of a key piece of information, when the patient is determined to be at something we call maximal medical improvement. And this means that the condition is stable and will not significantly change within the next 1 year with or without additional treatment. And what does it really mean? Well, it means that all reasonable treatment has been offered, authorized, or accepted by the patient. So for instance, a doctor might say, well, this patient needs a knee surgery to get better, but the insurance company didn't approve it, and maybe it gets denied on appeal. So you don't just keep that case open until some future unknown time when the patient can get their knee surgery. Basically, that surgery is not available at that time. The patient's maybe gone through therapy, tried all the medications, maybe an injection. So everything's been tried. They've gotten as good as they can get, and therefore they are determined to have reached maximal medical improvement. Now, one thing I do want to point out, it's very, very important to understand, and this is a common misconception in California workers' comp, that the body parts are rated when they each become maximally medically improved. And claims contain body parts, but claims do not reach maximal medical improvement. So this means that maybe your shoulder that was a minor injury recovered fully or partially, and that one's ready to rate right now. But the low back and the injury actually is going to need a surgery. It's going to need a year of rehab, you know, all kinds of pain management and stuff. And that may actually become maximally medically improved at 1 to 2 years later after the shoulder. So the key understanding here is that this is about the best improvement that the patient can attain. This isn't about patients who get worse and worse over time, because it's called maximal medical improvement. So the key to understanding is that, have they gotten as good as they will get? Again, assuming that everything's been offered, completed, or accepted, because, you know, sometimes a patient is just not ready to have a surgery, for instance. And if that's the case, go ahead and make them permanent and stationary. Say they're at maximal medical improvement, and we'll talk about something called future care, where if they change their mind or their condition changes, et cetera, they can go ahead and have a surgery in the future, but it doesn't have to delay the maximal medical improvement determination. Now, as I said before, each body part needs to have an MMI report done, a PR4 report. Now, the other thing that is important is that every case in California that's recorded, and I won't go into what determines a recorded case, but every case in California actually has to have a PR4 report. And it's just like every case that's recorded needs a doctor's first. Every case, you know, needs a follow-up called a PR2. And every case actually has to have a PR4 to be determined as complete by the stakeholders. And these reports are very important because they will outline the final elements of loss that are present or absent when the claim is quote unquote complete or settled. Because that way, think about it, the patient goes off to another job, they hurt the same body part. If they were released, you know, just under a PR2 or no impairment, there's going to be a big mess on the hands for the carriers trying to figure out, well, is this a residual left over from the old injury or is this from the new injury? Who's responsible for this? And now you've created a whole can of worms for stakeholders to try to figure out, well, there was never a PR4 report. How do we know how well they were? Was there impairment? You know, all these questions that come up. So that's really a key concept, is that if you have a recordable case, you have to be preparing a PR4 report. Hello, my name is Dr. John Alchemy, and I'm here with Rate Fast today. We're going to talk about, when is a PR4 done? I have been doing California workers' compensation for about 20 years, doing impairment reports in the California work comp system. So this mini podcast is to help you understand how to select and when to decide a patient has become maximally medically improved and their PR4 report is ready to be drafted. The first point to know, a PR4 report is done when the patient has reached maximal medical improvement. In California, we use the AMA Guides 5th edition, and that 5th edition determines that maximal medical improvement is attained when the patient is not expected to have any further improvement in their condition with or without treatment for the next 1 year. Now, maximal medical improvement simply means practically, from our standpoint, that all reasonable treatment has been completed, offered, and accepted. So this could mean that medications, therapy, and diagnostic testing has all been done. Maybe nothing was found, or maybe a surgery was recommended by an orthopedic surgeon, but the patient declined, or that maybe something was recommended for treatment, but was denied by the insurance carrier and also denied on appeal. So in those situations, when an RFA has been denied, that's essentially the same as the treatment being taken off the table and no longer being considered for holding up the case for being rated. Now, and the next point is that MMI can be achieved if the treatment is not available. And I just briefly touched on that, that often the most common case is, you know, a doctor decides that the patient can't be made MMI because they just haven't had all the treatment. But again, if there is a denial that's been done and that is not going to be overturned anytime soon, that case is ready for MMI, and a PR4 report should be done on that body part. Next, often patients are at maximal medical improvement if they are 6 to 12 months post-op. Usually, they are not reporting any improvement in their pain at that time, and they're not reporting any reasonable functional gains in their activity at home. And again, that's what defines maximal medical improvement. Also, if a claim has been open for 1 year and there's no immediate plan for surgery or an intervention, that case should be considered for maximal medical improvement. So those are just some things that can help you select the patients that need to have these MMIs cases done
and the PR4 report completed. Finally, in California, there is a rule that the primary treater must deliver that PR4 report within 20 days of making the determination of their body part being at maximal medical improvement. And once that's determined in the chart, the report is supposed to be filed with the carrier so the claim adjudication can go forward. Finally, if you need help determining MMI, we do have a website, and that's at ratefastmmi.com. And you can go there, and it simply asks you a few questions, helps you determine what to do next in the case. It'll ask you if something's been approved or a surgery's been completed or if something's been denied. And it will help guide you through the process technically of asking particular questions of yourself and of the patient to determine if MMI is attained, a very helpful tool. I hope that's been helpful. If you have any other questions, you can always contact us at info@rate-fast.com. And again, this is Dr. John Alchemy. We look forward to helping you with all those PR4 reports.
Hello, this is Chris Hall. I'm the Sales and Clinical Educational Director for RateFast and RateFast Express. And what I'd like to do today is acquaint you with what exactly is RateFast Express and how can it help you write your PR4 reports for your workers' compensation patients. Now, as you discovered in our other modules, manually completing PR4 reports on your own can prove to be a daunting task. Typically, if a primary treating physician manually prepares the PR4 report, they could expect that it would take an average of 1.5 to 2 hours of their time per patient to produce an accurate and complete PR4 report. RateFast Express delivers a comprehensive PR4 report quickly and accurately, and other than the primary treating physician having to review the results, we deliver a signature-ready PR4 really without any impact on the provider's time. As a provider, you're an expert in caring for your patients. At RateFast, we are experts in writing PR4 reports that are acceptable to all stakeholders and calculating accurate whole person impairment ratings. And RateFast reports are constructed to ensure that all stakeholders get exactly what is required. All reports, of course, include apportionment, future care, work status, and all of that is based on your own chart findings. Of course, everything is matched up with what the AMA guides, the adjusters, the attorneys, and ultimately the workers' compensation judges require. Now, how do you order a PR4 for RateFast Express? What exactly is the workflow in the clinic? Initially, it's a simple step. You indicate that that patient is at MMI and let your MA know to schedule a RateFast PR4. From there, depending on the clinic, either the MA or an administrative person will send the required information on to RateFast. A scheduler in your clinic will set up a follow-up appointment with your patient to review the completed PR4 in about 2 weeks. Now, finally, your MA will provide a completed PR4 for you to review. And this, of course, is a signature-ready PR4. And usually that's 3 to 5 days after submissions that would be available to you. And that's it. The average primary treating physician will spend under 5 minutes in this entire process, and really it's about reviewing, ensuring that it's as accurate as possible, and signing off and getting it back to your staff to send into the adjuster. Now, if you have any questions, I'm always available. You can reach me via email or on my cell phone. My email is c.hall@rate-fast.com. Again, that's c.hall@rate-fast.com. And my cell number is 707-484-5778. Please let me know if I can help in any way. I look forward to hearing from you.
A PR4 report is a comprehensive summary of the injury consequences that result in symptoms and, importantly,
functional limitations, and objective physical exam findings. Now, this also includes any diagnostic tests, surgical procedures, or interventions that were performed throughout the case management. Now, the findings of these reports are calculated to determine the ultimate loss of the whole person function. And in the AMA Guide's fifth edition, which we use in California, that's known as the whole person impairment. And you're going to see that word in the report either as WPI or WP, depending on what you're reading. Now, this report has some key elements. Listen up carefully. Here's what's in this report. Number one, the report is going to outline the future anticipated medical care to maintain the best function for the patient. So this might include medications, physical therapies, injections, diagnostic tests, referral to specialists, and or maybe a special procedure that either the patient didn't want to need or they don't need right now, but they might need in the future, like a total knee for someone who has severe arthritis. Maybe they're too young, but when they get old enough or the symptoms get worse, they might need that total knee replaced. So that's called future care. Number two, apportionment. Apportionment is a little confusing, but the basic concept is pretty simple. It just determines how much of the functional loss at the time of the rating is due to the referenced work injury and how much of this loss is due to other factors, such as a previous injury or arthritis that the patient had or other medical conditions. Maybe they had rheumatoid arthritis or underlying diabetes that contributed to their carpal tunnel, that type of thing. So typically, they're pre-existing conditions not related directly to the work injury. That's called apportionment. Now, there's also an additional determination of, called a pain add-on, and this is whether or not the circumstances or the impact of the injury has resulted in additional pain that's not exactly and perfectly captured by the rating, and that's called a pain add-on. So in California, the doctor has to determine if in addition to the usual rating, is the patient's condition such that they're maybe going to get a couple extra points, up to 3% of whole person impairment added on for extra pain. Okay, now the last part of the PR4 report, and a very important part, is the permanent functional limitations. Now we often refer to these as work restrictions, but really they're functional limitations. And so this basically says and tells all the stakeholders going forward, what are the permanent limitations of this person at work? What can they lift? How often can they reach? How long can they stand? Can they crawl? Can they be in certain environments? Can it be, you know, certain temperatures they have to be in, uneven terrain, you know, all of these things. Now, why is this so important? And this gets missed often when you're going to sit the patient down and have a discussion that they are at maximal medical improvement. If they are going to walk out of that office with permanent functional limitations, you have to explain to them that the employer, when this report is done, has to determine if these limitations can be reasonably accommodated on a permanent basis. If they cannot, then the employer may have to release the injured worker from their job. And so that is a very, very big deal because the injured worker may have been on modifications for months and in some cases years, but as soon as those restrictions change from temporary during the active treatment of the case to permanent, because now we're talking about permanent impairment and a PR4 report, these things become permanent and now the employer has to make a determination if they can keep this employee on. So it's a pretty big deal.
Hello, my name is Dr. John Alchemy. I'm a physician in California and founder of RateFast. I'm here today to talk to you about impairment ratings and why a PR4 report is done. I've been doing impairment rating in California for over 20 years, so I'm hoping to share some of my knowledge here and help you understand why these PR4 reports have to be done and what the benefits are to the stakeholders when they are complete. The PR4 report, I usually communicate to people that this is a tax return on an injury. It's a comprehensive summary. It goes through from top to bottom about how the patient's doing at the time of their maximal medical improvement, what kind of limitations they're having in their activities of daily living, and what their physical exam is looking like at the time of this report. Additionally, there should be findings of imaging, diagnostic tests, and interventional procedures that have been done. All of these things may be considered in the impairment rating. The report then will go on to include future care, what the individual needs to have going forward to take care of their symptoms. If they're going to need a surgery coming up or in the distant future, something like that. It also talks about apportionment, and apportionment is simply the determination of what factors from the industrial injury have resulted in the permanent disability that will be calculated, and what elements due to non-industrial factors, such as maybe a remote car accident or a fracture they've had in the past, or simply age-related conditions like arthritis, etc. Additional considerations for pain is in the report, and once this is done, then the documentation can be sent to the insurance company so a settlement can be prepared. So again, the stakeholders will then take a look at this report, make sure that it contains to their level of satisfaction the amount of detail and specificity in the exam, and then the calculations of the whole person impairment, which is the final rating result, that can be reviewed, checked, and accepted. So step three is really the big part of the PR4 report. It now allows the concept of settlement to be approached. And in this process, there are certain tables. Something called the permanent disability rating is generated, and that is foundational to the impairment report. And once that's done, then a settlement of proposal can be given to the injured worker. Now, there are two ways that this claim can be settled. One is a settlement payment with the access to future care as outlined in the report. But the second one is called a compromise and release. Some patients choose to do a compromise and release. It's a larger amount of money, but in return, the insurance company has no liability for any more future care. So in those situations, it's expected that the injured worker will take their award and they can simply pay cash going forward for their future care. And then finally, why are these reports important and why are they done? They have to be done accurately and correctly, and that's why we created RateFast and RateFast Express. So we take a lot of the busy and tedious work off the table for you and allow you to be a doctor, see the patient, do a great exam, do a great history, and let us do all the formatting and calculations for you. Now, an incorrect or incomplete report may result in unnecessary delay and costly second opinions in the medical legal realm. So using a product such as RateFast Express is a great way to avoid or minimize the possibility that your report is going to be incomplete or have to come back to you for letters or concerns, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I hope this has been helpful. Again, this is Dr. John Alchemy reporting to you guys on the PR4 report and why a PR4 report is done. If you'd like to learn more, please come to our blog site at rate-fast.com. Click on providers, and we have all kinds of resources there, learning opportunities, and more podcasts for you. All right. Thank you so much.
Traditionally, a PR4 report designates that the primary treating physician does it. So there are special rules through the Division of Workers' Comp that the primary treater has certain roles to fulfill when taking care of an injured worker. And just like they have to do a doctor's first report and a PR2 report, they have to create a PR4 report on every registered or what we call recordable injury that is filed with a carrier. Now, you know, the PR4 report, just to be clear, goes under several names. The most correct title is PR-4 report. It sometimes is called a permanent and stationary report. Sometimes it's called a maximal medical improvement or an MMI report or a final report. You'll get all kinds of names. But PR-4 is a special designation by the Division of Workers' Comp that means the primary treater is going to do the PR-4 report. So the primary treating physician can do it themselves, or they can designate someone to do it for them. So for instance, in my practice, I'll often get doctors in the community who either don't want to do it, don't know how, or don't have time, and they'll simply refer the case to me, and I will do the impairment report for them. Now, if that is the case, the primary treater still has to adopt the report as their own for it to be official. And that's something to keep in mind. So So if you get a report back and it's your patient, you do have to sign off on it that you do concur with the findings, or you have to outline what changes you think are necessary, and then obviously outline why. Sometimes the primary treater doesn't have anyone in the network or know of anyone in the network to do it. And then these cases get referred on to the qualified medical evaluators at the state. The downside of that is it takes a long, long time to go through that system. Often months. The report may or may not be correct. Qualified medical evaluators are not required to pass any test of competency on impairment rating, believe it or not. So their reports are not necessarily any better than a primary treating physician's report. But again, that's the main group of people working with these PR4 reports. Now, one last thing that I'll say is that when a patient gets referred off, if they get referred off to the QME or qualified medical evaluator, the report is then called a medical legal report. It's not called a PR4 report because it is not a primary treater or a direct network designate that is doing the report for the doctor. Well, the PR4 report is done, and it contains several elements. The first element is a detailed history. And this typically will include what are the pain values, what's the frequency of the pain and symptoms, are they relying on medications, are they having side effects from the medications, because believe it or not, side effects are additionally rateable in impairment reports, or are they pain-free but rely upon medications to remain pain-free, because if that's the case, that's another different rating consideration. So we want to know about how they're doing, how frequently they're feeling the symptoms, what they need to feel as good as they can. And remember, this is to alleviate and or cure the remaining symptoms of an industrial injury. Number two in the exam that often gets overlooked is the review of activities of daily living. Now, we always talk and ask patients, well, what can you do at work? What can't you do at work, et cetera? But for impairment rating, it's not about what they can do at work at all. And that's because work is a very complex task and it varies from individual to individual. So instead, the impairment rating is actually carried out based on what we all have to do at home. So these might include things like self-care, getting dressed, bathing, toileting, cooking, typing, writing, basic hand functions, grasping, lifting, transportation, driving, sexual activities are a big part of the activities of daily living. Sleep is another one. And then, of course, the standard activities of standing, sitting, walking, climbing, etc. So the activities of daily living, that's point number two. Number three, we want an objective physical exam with motions of degrees to the nearest degree if possible. But we want to know what the range of motion is. I can't tell you how often I'm doing or trying to help someone with their impairment report, and you look through the physical exam, there was no range of motion done on the shoulder or no range of motion done on the back. So if you're doing an orthopedic exam, be certain that there's some communication of the nearest degree of motion. We like ranges of motion to be done on the upper extremities at least twice to make sure that they're roughly within 10% of one another. And on the lower extremity, we want those measurements done three times. Range of motion of the spine, three times. So range of motion is a very important component of the physical exam. Neurosensory testing, we want to know about sensory loss, what dermatome it's in, what nerve it's in, if there's motor weakness, those types of things are important. And then, of course, special testing, such as knee laxity or shoulder dislocating on physical exam, et cetera. So that's point number three, is the objective physical exam. Number four, a review of the diagnostic tests. So we're talking about x-rays showing arthritis, neurodiagnostic studies maybe showing a nerve compression, carpal tunnel, cubital tunnel, something of that nature. And then we also want a review of what surgical procedures were done. Believe it or not, certain surgical procedures in and by themselves will give impairment. So a common one is having a partial meniscus surgery on your knee removed. Obviously, a total knee is a special rating consideration, and that's a surgery. carpal tunnel release is another condition that results in certain considerations for impairment. So we do want to know what has been done as far as procedures. Even epidural injections can be rateable in a claim. So that's number four, diagnostic tests and procedures and intervention. And then number five is the biggest and most obvious one. We have to do some calculations. So in California and several other states, we use the AMA Guides 5th edition. And basically this is a set of rules that we follow to go through each body part and determine how much loss there is. So for instance, a zero impairment means that the individual has no measurable loss and has no limitation on their function at all. Whereas a rating as high as 90 or 100%, the AMA guide said, this person is actually dependent on someone else for nearly all of their activities of daily living, or even approaching death. So those are the two main spectrums that we use to kind of reference. And I use those to help communicate to a patient when they don't understand, you know, what does it mean to have a 4% impairment loss? I think it should be 26. You know, patients will say this, but I always give them that range so that they can kind of get some reference in their head as to, you know, what a 100 really is and what a zero is. So it's important that you understand that too. And then, as I said, it's important that as each body part becomes maximally medically improved, it will get its whole person impairment. When the last body part is rated, that entire claim is now at MMI, and all of the different body parts are combined using a certain formula, and that will determine the final whole person impairment of the claim. Now, just to kind of summarize this whole thing, RateFast is a service that's very much like taking your taxes to a CPA. You give us the information, we compile it, we get the return together, we format it, and we give it to you. And just like your taxes, you're responsible for signing off. You're responsible for checking if there's any accuracy or concerns or anything you don't agree with. And after that, it can be sent off to the carrier and the claim can be adjudicated. So in a nutshell, hopefully this has helped out everyone understand what is a PR4 in California, when is it done, who does it, why do we do it, and what is it, et cetera. So that's it in a nutshell, Corey.
Well, thank you so much for telling us about the PR4 report today, John. And if you have any more questions about a PR4 report, how it's done, where it's done, why it's done, you can visit our blog at blog.rate-fast.com. Thanks again for coming on today, John.
Thanks for having us, Corey. We'll talk later.
All right. So now we have knowledge of who rates the impairment report, and we have a much better fundamental understanding of what the impairment report, the PR4 impairment report is. Now, the next question is, where is a PR4 report done?
You know, that's, it sounds like sort of a simple and a crazy question, but basically PR4 reports can be done under several circumstances. So most traditionally, it's done where you meet with the patient at a recheck. You say, you know what, I think everything's stable. We're not going to be getting any better anytime soon. I'm going to write this report. You come on back to the office and we'll do a PR4 report in the office. And we'll talk a little bit about, you know, what the elements of that report is and what that office visit looks like. Now in the era of COVID-19, almost everybody's on board now with also doing online impairment reports. And so that's usually a video visit, face-to-face visit. You know, the exam is performed virtually. The report is written up and served as if they've been in the office. So those are kind of probably two of the more traditional concepts. I'm going to bring you back. I'll do the exam in the office. I'll write your report for you at that exam, or I'm going to meet you online. We're going to do it. Now, PR4 reports can be done retrospectively based on the last PR2 report, because sometimes the patient either can't come back in, they're working now, they're full duty, they still have to have that PR4 report, as we said, or sometimes they've been lost to follow-up. I've had multiple cases where people have moved. On rare occasions, I've had people who are in the middle of a work comp claim and they died for some other reason. There still has to be some type of determination on what their permanent impairment was. So retrospectively is another way that impairment reports can be done too. So they can be done in person, virtually, or retrospectively.
Hello, my name is Dr. John Alchemy here with Rate Fast Express, and today we are going to do a mini podcast on common myths and mistakes for PR4 reports. My name is Dr. John Alchemy, as I noted. I'm a family practice doctor. I've been doing PR4 reports and impairment reports in California for over 20 years. Today, we're going to talk about some of the common issues and mistakes providers do and the limitations and delays in the PR4 report. Remember, once a patient is made permanent and stationary using the PR4 report, the primary treating physician can get the claim all set for settlement and adjudication and make sure that all the benefits of future care and cash settlement can go forward for the injured worker. Number one, the most common request that we hear why a PR4 can't be done is my treatment has been denied. So when you go ahead and put in that request for an RFA, it has to go through utilization review, may or may not be approved. It can go to a second IMR approval. That can be denied. But once it's been denied, and most often denied twice through the IMR process, the independent medical review, that can be just crossed off your list for the time being. So if you wanted to get a certain medication, you wanted to get a certain consultant, and it's just not going to be approved, when you are doing your PR4 report, you just basically have to check that off the list. I tried to do it. You can document it in the PR4 report if you want, but you do need to move on at that point. Number two, my patient is not getting better. This is why we have created the permanent and stationary report. Some patients, unfortunately, do not make a full functional recovery. And because of that, we have created the PR4 report here in California. And this report outlines all of the patient's residuals, signs, symptoms, findings, and functional loss. And this report is written when the patient is at maximal medical improvement. So if the patient keeps coming in and saying, I'm the same, I'm getting worse, I'm the same, I'm getting worse, and all the reasonable treatment has been offered, or it's been denied, or it's been tried or accepted by the patient, it's time to get that PR4 going. So the patient is not getting better is not an excuse to not do a PR4 report. Next, the third most common one we hear is, I haven't been able to return the employee to full duty. And again, the PR4 report is not necessarily about returning the person to full duty. It's about getting the patient as best we can and then documenting what the residuals are and what the functional limitations are going to be on a quote-unquote permanent basis. So again, just because you haven't been able to get them back to full duty does not mean the PR4 report cannot be done. Number four, the patient might need surgery in the future. Yes, they might, but as long as they don't need it in the immediate future, meaning an orthopedic surgeon is saying we have to do this next month, next week, or the patient and the surgeon are both on the same page, this, you know, is going to be done within the next 3 months, that's fine. Hold off on the PR4. But if they're saying at some point in the future and it's not agreed upon, or maybe that surgery has been denied through utilization review, at that point, you can go ahead and make them permanent and stationary using the PR4 report. And you put it into the future care, so the future treatment. You can simply say the patient declined surgery at this time or surgery has been denied by utilization review at this point, but you can still put future surgery and have it accessible to the patient after the PR4. Number five, sometimes we hear, I don't want to give up on the patient. And this is all good. You know, our job is to get that patient doing as well as they can, get them back to work, get them functioning, we do the best we can. But sometimes, despite our best efforts and getting them all the therapy that we can, they still are not going to get better. And our job with taking care of these patients is to be an advocate, to do our best, but also getting them that permanent and stationary report, that PR4 report, is sometimes doing the right thing to get the patient to move on, to accept where they are with their injury, and to start to get them benefits and another plan going forward. Number six, there is a QME exam scheduled or maybe to be scheduled. This is a common mistake. Just because a QME is going to take place does not mean that the primary treater should halt or hold the permanent and stationary PR4 report if they think the patient is truly at maximal medical improvement. Now, I also serve as a QME, and the QME and the primary treater both are actually required to deliver a rating. One can adopt the rating of another, but in general, Think of the primary treating physician's treatment and decision for MMI to be in parallel and independent of what the QME might say. Now, sometimes the QME report can be helpful, but it's not something that should hold up or delay the primary treater from making that PR4 report just because it's some opinion of the QME. Now, if the QME does recommend some treatment in the future, that's fine. It can all be done under future care. So if they're requesting an MRI that got denied, the patient was made permanent and stationary by the primary treater, and the QME says they need an MRI, why, the QME can certainly get that MRI, but it doesn't change the status of the PR4 unless that person goes on to then get a surgery because of that MRI. And then all that you do is you do another PR4 after the patient has recovered from surgery. So a little long-winded, but the bottom line is, just because there's a QME on the case does not mean that the primary treating physician should stop thinking and make a determination about when to do that permanent and stationary report. I hope all this has been helpful. If you have any questions, you can reach us at info@rate-fast.com. You can come join our blog, check out resources for providers, and we'll look forward to working with you on getting these cases done. Thank you.
For more information on properly writing workers' compensation PR4 reports, visit our blog at blog.rate-fast.com. And for more information on RateFast Workers' Compensation Software Suite, visit rate-fast.com. And to learn about RateFast Express, RateFast 3-day impairment rating writing service, visit ratefastexpress.com.